Bienvenue dans Common Sense, le podcast qui remet du sens dans l'univers de la com. Je suis Clémence Langer, journaliste mode.
Et moi, Julia Felicani, responsable en relations publiques et communication corporate. We are thrilled to be back today with a new episode around Dafine, an incredible jewelry brand. Founded in London in 2018 by Damasia Ball de Carmarthen and Philippine de Foulon, Dafine embodies the beauty of simplicity and at the same time the strength of women. Their jewelry is designed to be your daily companion, offering timeless elegance and a mood-lifting touch. Every Dafine piece is meticulously crafted by hand in a Jaipur atelier, where skilled artisans infuse their magic into each creation. From their commitment to ethical sourcing and sustainable production, we'll be diving at the heart of the brand. So join us today on this journey as we explore the world of Dafine, where heritage meets contemporary and craftsmanship meets a passion for beauty. Hello, hello. I know you founded Dafine in 2018 around the shared vision for perfectionism and minimalist design. So what made you pursue the path of entrepreneurship? So tell us a bit more, you know, about this beautiful story.
Thanks for having us, Julia. And well, we founded Dafine 5 years ago when we've met and we first chose each other over a feeling, I guess, that we would work really well together, but we really didn't have any idea yet of that little baby that is Dafine now. And we were both really sure that we want to have our own companies, and that's it all started.
Just to add to that, yeah, we always say we chose each other, as Philippine said, as business partners first. And then the idea for Dafine came to mind. At first, we were thinking of doing something maybe interior designer related. Then we were thinking of, you know, creating some oils from Morocco. It's like we both had this entrepreneurial spirit. And then, you know, one day Philippine called me in September and she said, I finally have the idea for us. We should start a jewelry brand. And I told her, I know nothing about jewelry. She's like, don't worry, we'll figure it out. And, you know, there it started and there we went. It did help the fact that she had a background in jewelry. So she had been working in the industry for 10 plus years. But yes, it was a very sporadic thing. We knew that we wanted to work together. And I think that was the main drive of the early days of the brand.
So Damasia, I know you're Argentinian and Filipino, you're French. So could you tell us a bit more about your background, where you grew up? So, you know, all the story that brings you now to be where you are and Dafine to be the brand that it is.
I think both of us come from families of strong women. So even if I'm from Argentina and, you know, Philippine is French, we're across the world, basically, we share a lot of the same family values. And I think that is something that drew us together and helped, you know, form Dafine and form the brand. From Argentina, I think it is a country that has a lot of, you know, European and nostalgic heritage. You're always kind of like looking at the past, you're looking at, you know, ancestors that immigrated. So we're constantly, you know, nostalgic for the past. And I think that's something that really has pulled, you know, and brought down to Dafine in terms of design. And I know that Philippine shares a lot of those same type of values.
What was really easy when we started to work together is that even if it's hard to express exactly what you're meaning and how you want it to be done, I think we have that thing with Dama that we speak the same language without talking. It's like if we're looking at something, it's like, oh, this is chic. Yes, this is chic. And this is it. And we're happy about it. And we move to the other one. When it comes to design, even in the website or the packaging or the branding and how we want it to be, it's we really speak the same language and it's easy for us just to work around our ideas. So that's also helped a lot. That's something we don't have to fight over. You know, it's really the easy part between us. It's that we share the same value and we have the same eye. Our eye always see most of it the same thing. I'm a bit more colorful than Damasia is, but at the end we always find the right middle. She's like, "Oh, Philou, you're too excited. Let's just cool it down a little bit." And then I'm like, "Yes, you're right. It only works if you cool it down." I tend to be a little bit French in the terms like I'm moving around fast. I want things to be done quickly, and then working with Dama, just cool everything down, and that's the way to do things right, you know, perfectly. That you're sure you're doing something meaningful that is actually done properly if you take the time to do it, and if you really take the time to think about it. So that's a good combo for us. Works for accounting, it works for design, it works for logistics, it works for everything. You know, getting the thrill of the idea and then take the time to think about it.
I think it was really interesting what Damasia was actually talking about, because we always say that women have an instinct about things and about like what we love and what we are doing, and the instinct is really strong in our DNA. And when Damasia talked about the instinct and that you are immediately like drawn into something and you know that it's right, and you share this instinct, can you talk about more about this instinct into business? Like, how do you follow the instinct into the business part of your brand also?
I thought the instinct was and still is a very big part of our daily job. But I think also that your instinct can, in business, can only take you to a certain level. I think after 5 years, we realized that everything was based on instinct. The way we met, the way we choose to actually have a jewelry brand, how we hire people to work with us, how we even choose the showroom and where it was based. Everything was based on instinct, because it was kind of easy for us to take some decision based on instinct. After 5 years and having people working with us and asking us all the time questions and like, what should we do next? How you want to move? How do you see that, Fina? I think the instinct, unfortunately, is not enough now. You know, it's like most of our job now is very analytic, and we really need to, if you want to grow to a certain level, I think you still have the instinct about the design and what people want and how they're going to receive the message. But for the actual growth, the extent is not enough. And I was this weekend surrounded by other entrepreneurs, and some you could really like divide them in two. They were like the early start and everything was based on instinct. And this other woman, they were really analytic since day one, and they were, this is what we want to do. In 5 years, we're going to be here. We are raising money because that's where we want to be. So I think, yes, women are good with instinct, but they also need to add a little bit more if they want to push it further.
And is it like entrepreneurship? Is it something that you always consider, that you had in your blood, or was it something that you discovered with Affin?
For me, on a personal level, yes. I always knew that I wanted to have my brand. I think that it was also linked to the sometimes the freedom it gives you to just manage your own times, the reward of, you know, being able to work really hard for something that is yours. It's very meaningful to have your own brand. I think I didn't realize how challenging it also would be, in the fact that you can't ever turn off, you can't ever take a holiday, you can't ever go to sleep not dreaming about your brand. So it really does take over 100%. I think I was a bit of a dreamer when I said that I wanted to have my own company one day, and I didn't really know the implications of it. But if I had to go back and do it again, of course I would. I also did actually study entrepreneurship in business school. So that was, you know, my main concentration, as you say, in the United States was entrepreneurship. So I definitely knew that I wanted to enter this journey. And I know that Philippine, I'm sure she'll speak more about it now, but she actually comes from a family of entrepreneurs.
Yeah, this, I think for me, it wasn't really a choice. That's how it is in my family. That's how I see people working around me since I'm a kid. So it was more, I started my career as an employee. And I think that was the shock in my family. You know, they were like, what do you mean you're going to work for someone? Like, why don't you have your own thing? It's like I needed a break from it because as Damasia is saying, I feel entrepreneurship really goes into your life, into the whole level. I mean, an entrepreneur go back home and he works and breathes about his company. That's also, it's going to spread on your friends, on your family, on, you know, people you're living with. And I needed a break. So I started as being an employee and it was a lot of fun. And but yeah, eventually this is who I am and how I was raised. So
talking about that, you're like, Damasia is based in London, Philippine, you're based in Paris. And I know like nowadays after COVID, like we all can work from abroad. We can all connect on Zoom or like today on Riverside and work things, you know, from distance. How does it work for you for like a, you know, for your business?
It works well. We used to work in the same city. So Philippine used to be based in London. So when we launched the brand, we were both in the same city. She moved back to Paris 2020. So it's been 3 years now. To be honest, it works really well. As you said, everyone's just used to working remotely. I think it makes it more efficient because when we talk about things that are important. We have a call for 2 hours and we make sure not to really go out of subject too much. We don't end up, you know, having the daily chit chat of, you know, what did you do this weekend or tell me about what your son is up to. I think it just makes it a lot more work based. And yeah, I think from my point of view, I think it probably even works better.
Yeah, you lose less time about chit chat and you have more like go straight to the point and you make things done. And did you have any challenge that you had to overcome?
I'm laughing inside because when we reviewed the question with Dama, we were like, well, I feel this question could be a podcast in itself, you know, it's like being challenging, like how much time do you have? I mean, each day it's a challenge. And I think when we start a call talking about something, we're like, oh, we didn't have time to speak about this. And like, and how do we put ourselves into that situation is a sentence we say every day, you know, and always we start our day like this and we have to, yeah, just build the mountain that appear actually every day. That's how it is right now at our stage. But I feel the main challenge and that I'm really happy to share because I feel that could help a lot of people is to feel legit and not to be shy to say what you're doing and why you're doing it. And this, for me personally, take me a very long time. I think the two first year when people were asking me, what do you do? What's your brand names? I was whispering, you know, I was like, well, I'm doing jewelry. What's the name? Oh, Daphne is like, what? What's the name? You know, it took me a very long time to say, this is who I am. I am an entrepreneur. I have a business partner. We have a jewelry brand. We're really proud of it. Let me talk to you about it. You know, and you're just feeling legit in everything you're doing and you need to do a lot of things. Is the big challenge because when you're talking to lawyers, when you're talking to the accounting, when you're talking to the digital marketing, and this is not your background, but people are still waiting for you to take a decision or like to show them the next move. You need to be there and you need to say, this is how we're going to do it. And we're going to do it together. So for me, challenges on a daily basis. Yes, this is being an entrepreneur, but the main challenge is to really trust that you can do it all.
So Daphne was launched around the idea of less is more. I think it speaks to everyone. But the jewelry segment seems a bit crowded. So how does Daphne stand out?
I think with Daphne, from the beginning, we wanted to be anti-trend. I think we actually launched the brand because we couldn't find a product in our sector that we connected to. All the pieces at the bit more of the accessible price point were very trend-led. The earrings up and down the ear, the weight, too much layering. And we knew from the beginning we wanted to go against it. So I think for us, we've always made a point to stand out and to do things differently and to offer a product that is not readily available in the marketplace. And I'm quite proud to say that 5 years in, I don't think we have a direct competitor. I think that, yes, there are a lot of jewelry brands within our price point now, especially in the UK. It's very crowded. But I think with what we're designing and what we're trying to say and the values we're trying to push in Daphne are quite different than anybody else is doing.
And talking about the values and the ethos of Daphne, how would you describe it?
We really take our time to think about everything we're doing, and I feel also it's our generation that needs to be sustainable, but not just, you know, putting the right thing into the right bin. I mean, it's so much a challenge for us that everything we need to do is, it really has the l'empreinte, you know, the stamp of like, do I need to add this to this world? You know, is it really meaningful? Why am I even doing it? And I think on a global, not just for the brand, like globally, how the ethos of what we're doing is like, do we really need to do this? And where we're adding a pieces, and we don't really launch so much pieces, and it's also a constant discussion we have internally, because the industry pushing you to do more. The one thing retailers tell us is like, oh, but you only have 60 SKUs. And we're like, yes, we keep what working and what people want because the design resonates into their soul, and the rest, we're not going to produce it anymore. Or like, yeah, we think this one was relevant, but it's not relevant this year and might not be relevant in 10 years. So let's stop producing things and being very careful of what we bring to that world, because we don't need much stuff, you know. And that's also the constant battle we have with Dama, is like, technically, you don't need a piece of jewelry. The whole idea is not to add more, to push more, like to make you want to buy it and not want it in 2 months. You know, the whole thing is really like, I'm convinced it's a good product. I'm convinced it's a safe design. It's been here for years. It's going to be here in the next 10 years because it's simple and complicated, and we make everything at heart. So, you know, it's a good gift for you or for your mom. And I'm pretty confident she's going to be happy receiving it, your mom, your sister, or your friends. And I'm really proud. Go for it. You know, if you're buying it and you're having an issue, I'm going to be behind customer service because I'm really happy with my product. I'm not going to. And one thing that, you know, sometimes we have logistic issues because we don't control it, unfortunately. And one thing that really drives us crazy, and when a customer is frustrating about logistic, which is last thing of the whole exercise of the sale, and we're like, fuck, you know, everything we put really, like, really much care to it, and the customer message is not received properly, and then drive us crazy. So like, we're slow, but we're really meticulous.
Yeah, but I think what made Daphne really known is your design. So pushing your best sellers and the design that made the core of Daphne Styles was really the a part of like the success of Daphne. And I think it's a really good way to stand out as a jewelry brand, is to have like those styles years after years with just your DNA. And you chose to produce, I don't know if it's every Daphne piece, but I know that you produce in Jaipur, so in India. Why did you make that choice?
Long story. So I was working with India in my previous job, And I really connect with India in terms of working. I know a lot of Western people find it really hard because of the cultural differences and the way that it's hard to communicate because, you know, it's kind of far from us. But I think what's great about India is you're going to throw an idea and it's always going to be yes. It can turn into a nightmare because they don't want to say no when they can't do it. And you have to like move around it and understand the silence. But the main thing is like there are people that are extremely talented. We only work with one factory, one atelier. We are the only two women that ever worked into that atelier. You know, it's like mostly 300, 400 people on two different buildings. And the only two women that go through these buildings are Damasia and I. So I think we like kind of like badass feeling when we go there and we're like, okay, man, this is us. Let's do it. But on on a daily basis, they agree to bet on us, you know, because I think, as you said, the jewelry industry is really crowded. People that want to do jewelry appear just every day. And the fact that this family factory that been into the industry for years decided to produce samples for these two ladies that were just trying in London, where they were in Jaipur, and we haven't met for a very long time. I think we only been to Jaipur maybe a year or 2 years after we launched the brand. So everything was based on trust and WhatsApp chat. And I think from that, it's, we've been very lucky, because I know that production can be really hard. And if you don't have a good production, like people you can count on, you don't have a business for us.
But also India is a really, really rich country for craftsmanships and tailoring. And we know that they have so many qualities. So how did you choose this factory in particular? Like, was it because it was a family business and that you wanted to continue this relationship?
But they choose us. I'm not kidding. You know, we send ideas of design to several people because we were unsure where to produce. We've tried Thailand. We were thinking about Italy at some point. And then we tried also India because I was working with them. And the only men that really like respond to our, you know, a requirement and get back to us and started to have a conversation with us saying, okay, you want to do this? We should do it like this. Let me do it. I'm going to ship you a sample. Was these people in India, and we met them completely randomly. We never worked with them. The first sample they sent were good. And we're like, okay, this is happening. The design is okay. The quality is good. Let's work together. And for the first time we went to Jaipur was, yes, probably 2 years after we started producing with them. And we were laughing with Dama into the cab because we're like, imagine the man doesn't exist. I mean, it's been 2 years. We're working with him, talking through WhatsApp, but maybe it was just a fake, you know, maybe it was like a random peek on the internet saying I'm the salesman of this company. It was a whole journey, you know, it was really funny because we were like, it probably doesn't exist, you know, and then it was there. It was an actual people and we get to know each other. We went for dinner. We met the father. We met the son-in-law. We met the whole family, and they're starting to become partner. But it was completely random. It's honestly was just that we were lucky to speak the same language, because that's what it is when you want to produce something. You're like, this is too small. And the other one is like, no, this is too big. And you're like, yeah, no, it's too small. You just need like, you see, like make it shorter. And in jewelry, you talk about millimeters. So I can think about it. I see a stone on a ring and I'm like, whoa, too big. And it's like, this is what you have put on the cats, which is, you know, the file that you're talking about. And I'm like, yeah, I said yes on the cats, but it's too big. And it's like, I don't think it's too big. And then it can like goes along. But this with these people, for some reason, when we say it's too big or it's too small, they get it. They just get it. And it makes easy to work with them.
Adding with that, that is where the instinct does become very important. I think when you choose a supplier to work with, it is like entering a marriage. When you choose your business partner, it's like entering a marriage. With your supplier, it has to be something that just feels right. You have to trust them. You have to, you know, really believe that they have your best interests at heart, which is what we have with our supplier. And from the beginning, it just felt like right. We didn't know who they were, but through the messages and through the communication, we knew that we were in good hands. And as Philippine said, it's unheard of in the industry, but they produced the first 25 samples for us without even requiring any type of payment. The first time that they ask us for any payment is when we place the first order. So it's something that we're like, okay, we know that we're getting into business with the people that share those same values as us.
So every piece is made with 18 karat gold laid over recycled brass. But this brass is certified by the responsible jewelry council. First, can you talk about this label in particular? Because I was not aware of it before digging to Daphne's story. So can you talk about maybe the criteria of this label?
The criteria are honestly, you know, they are very controlled by the whole industry. I mean, from Bulgari to us, you know, that people that are choosing to work with suppliers that are registered to the to that certificate, it's something that the whole industry is on the same path. It's of course a responsible supply chains. That's one of the main thing, the business ethics and the labor rights into the factory, and then it has, you know, other criteria, the human rights and social performance, the health and safety, you know, these kind of things. It's a very good thing. But it's also, I mean, in India, the first thing you see on the door outside of the factory is no children labor. You know, that's the main thing they put on the door. And you can tell that most of this, especially in Jaipur, because it's really like very deep craftsmanship, because the whole city craft for the whole world, as you said, you know, furniture, clothing, jewelry, everything, they kind of, they do it for us, you know. It's like, you want me to tell you that I'm not doing it, but I never done it. So I feel it was good, because the bad people needed to follow the rules, and it was good for that. But that doesn't mean that the whole industry was not working with ethics before that whole label even exists. So it's really good, because the, you know, the one that we're abusing now not allowed to do it, because everyone is very conscious about it. But we also have to say that a lot of people were already responsible even without this council stamp. But it's a good thing. Everyone is on it. It's mandatory today. I feel the customer is so aware of everything that he doesn't want to just buy shitty things that would have a bad influence. I think it's l'effet papillon. Everyone is really conscious that a small, you know, a small thing across the world is gonna just arrive to your daily life. So that's the thing. But it's honestly, for the anecdote, when I asked the supplier, "Oh, what kind of certificate do you have?" Because it was mostly for our wholesaler. "What kind of certificate do you have?" He was laughing. He's like, "Oh yeah, I did it, but I was doing it before. You know, I just put the label on it because you need the stamp. But we always work like that. It's like, if you Western people need it, we're gonna give you the certificate. But like, yes, no children labor. We and human rights at first. But again, we're very lucky, you know, with who we're working. So that's the thing.
Serendipity. It's a happy hazard. So you first started to sell only online, right? So 5 years later, what are your take on retail?
We launched Daphne and we wanted to be a direct-to-consumer brand. It's back in 2018 where direct-to-consumer brands were very the hype and you were able to, you know, have these tighter margins but offer a very good price for the customer. Then I think as we started growing, we started seeing the value in being in the right retailers. We've been very strategic in terms of where you can find our product. We've never actively gone out and, you know, reached out to any type of wholesalers for them to carry Daphine. But these days we are in just a few. I think there are five big ones, mostly in France and the UK. And they chose us, but let's just say that we said yes. We wanted to make sure that we are being represented by a company that has the same values, that has brands that we're proud to be part of their same curation. And now in the UK, for example, our biggest retailers Matches Fashion, and we've been with them for about a year now and have established a really healthy relationship with the buyer. You know, they really know the brand. They push the brand. They position the brand very well on their curations and edits. So I think it's very important for us to be aligned with, you know, the retailers that have the same, you know, value. I'm saying values again, but the retailers that have the same like aesthetic that we do. And then eventually we're thinking of having a retail store one day. So we don't think that retail is dead. We have done a few pop-ups with success. So I think in the next few years, hopefully you will be able to see somewhere a Daphine little tiny boutique.
We are recording on December 5th and you have a pop-up in Paris, no, coming up, or is it open already?
No, we have one coming in London next week with Bettina Saramica. I think what we have done pop-ups with other brands, not multiple, but like we always choose one partner, which we usually work with because we feel we share some kind of ethos and also we're aligned in terms of development and brand.
What do you think was the moment that changed everything for you and for your brand?
Definitely the first order that ever came in that was not family or friends. They're like, wow, somebody's actually purchasing Daphine and we don't know who they are. That was a big moment. We're like, okay, we actually have something. Someone that we don't know is purchasing Daphine. That means, you know, we're doing a good job with the product, with the branding, and, you know, it's going to be something that eventually we can scale. So I think that for us was quite big. And then there were some other pivotal moments. I think we were the early days, we kind of took off quite quickly because of Instagram and influencers just wearing our brand and pushing our brand. It was very organic. We didn't really have to invest in any type of like traditional marketing from the beginning. And then when we were seeing like, you know, some big influencers or big celebs wearing Daphine, we're like, oh wow, you know, this is unbelievable. I can't believe, you know, we've gotten to this. Then when, I don't know, Beyonce on the cover of Vogue was wearing Daphine, you know, that was another moment where like, wow, like we can't believe that, you know, Beyonce is wearing Daphine on the cover of Vogue. So I think there's like many, many type of moments throughout our story in the past 5 years that we can say like, we have something of value in our hands, but definitely there was nothing like that for sale.
We didn't talk about the creative process. So how does it work and where do you find your inspirations and how does everything work?
In terms of inspo, I'm always looking at women's jewelry. A little bit kind of as a freak, you know, I'm going to be into the street, into the store, everywhere I go. And my eyes just first goes on to this woman jewelry and it's old generation. This is how I start to feel the trend. And when my eyes stop on something, I'm like, oh, this is a good design. And usually I start talking to that person that thinks I'm a weirdo. So I'm going to be, oh, I really like your earrings. And then I need to get closer to see the proportion and how it was made and if there is a trick there that I didn't think about. So inspo is really, for me, is in the street on other people. I don't think we really reinvent the wheel, if I may say, in terms of design. It's just more like a treasure hunt on a daily basis where we want to find this really like uncomplicated, again, nice design that you want to wear all your life. You know, that one thing I'm always say when we're on pop-ups and we actually see clients, and I think I'm a really salesperson in that sense. It's like if someone is hesitating between two things, I'm like, honestly, if you're not sure, don't buy it. You know, it's like there's no point to buy these things because it's an impulse buy. And then in a few months, it's going to be in a drawer, in a box, and like you have completely forget about it. It's like if you feel you can wear it every day and that makes you going to be happy or confident or give you bon mine, just go for it. But if it's just like, oh, I'm going to buy it because today I'm feeling a little bit down and then a few days it's going to be in a drawer, like there is no point, you know, just it's not your day. You're not in the mood. You don't know what to choose. It's not a good sign. Just move. It's just like it's anti-consumerism. And then my husband is like, oh my God, okay, how this lady has a company. But at deep down, this is how I am, you know. It's like you already have too much stuff. So if you're choosing to buy this, it's because really it's going to make you happy and it's going to bring something to your day. And it can be a lot of things. This is really personal on why you're buying a jewelry, but it has to give you some kind of a thrill. Otherwise, just don't wear anything. It's fine.
How do you communicate, you know? How do you communicate with your clients? What's your favorite way? Because that's as well, it's something that can be tricky. As you said, you know, it can be something you don't want to push people to consume, but you need to communicate some way. So how do you do it?
I think for us, we've always been very strong with our photo shoots and campaigns from the beginning. So when we launched Daphine, we launched it with like a beautiful, you know, campaign of tablescapes and, you know, the jewelry mixed between silver and this romantic woman just daydreaming about, you know, whatever she was, you know, thinking about in the story. But we like to tell stories through images. And I think that is the key for building the brand is taking our consumers and potential customers on this visual type of journey. That is where we enjoy, you know, what we enjoy the most is just creating these moods and creating these stories, these visual stories. And then I think more on the actual day to day, it'd be, you know, more of the traditional methods. We're quite big on newsletters as of lately. In the beginning, we didn't really communicate much on newsletters. It was mostly Instagram. But I think in the past 2 years, we've seen a really big shift and a lot of engagement with newsletters and just the type of content that we put on there. I guess you can get your story across more through newsletters, whereas social media is just, you know, purely image led. And I think people are not engaging the same way as they were a few years ago. So we're always just also trying to keep up with the trend of how people like to receive and how everyone is engaging with all these different types of medias. But we really have seen a big boost in newsletters.
And talking about that, do you do an investment in PR or in any, you know, kind of, can be PR, but can be marketing, digital marketing. Do you have any investments that you're doing at the moment? And what do you think about the return on those investments?
5 years ago, the first person we hired, and we were just really beginning, was our PR in the UK called Laura Merritt. I mean, she was the first employee, you know, so like we that was really like the first investment we did. It was also, she was on our path. and she was starting her own company at the same time. So like we were into the same process, both starting our own company, and so we shared offices. So we were on a daily basis with our PR in the UK, and she was the third wheel. I feel what's really interesting with PR, and the whole industry is still on the ground, you know, and everything being so digital, being so Instagram, being so very fast and everything, the PR industry is on the ground. It's still it might look slow for some people because you don't, as you said, it's hard to see the return on investment straight away. Whereas like you put an ad on Instagram and you can track it and you get some analytics, you know, but what's really, first, I value the industry, the press, you know, I think there are good people that works in press. It's really challenging to have a job into press. I mean, I have friends, like their dream was to be a journalist at Elle or Vogue, and they really had to fight for it because you only have two or three that are going to make the cut, and then they handle to that job because everyone wants that job. So it's really a way to have the industry that talk about your work, which is really rewarding, and gets also the approval of the whole industry. Because as Damasia said, when you're on the cover of Vogue with Beyoncé, and you know that, you know, one stylist choose your brand, probably the assistant, and then he made the cut to the like big stylist, and then the photographer and the art direction of it, and then you made the cover. And it's huge. It's huge, and it stays. And after 3 years, we can still talk about it. And it was it was really rewarding for the brand. And it's a big milestone. It's a big step. It's also, I personally trust, you know, the press, and when they talk about the brand, or they said, you know, oh, Daphne did a great campaign today and they released great products, it's really important for us. We invested first in PR, and I think it was a very good thing. It's for some reason, even if you're saying, it's hard to track PR and I don't know if I'm getting anything out of it, when you get a good article about your brand, it's a huge milestone. People still find it that you have a legit brand.
I think it's a longer term strategy. So for us, when we invest in PR, we know that, you know, maybe the samples are being sent out now, but it's not going to be shot into another month, and it's going to be in the pages of, you know, Harper's Bazaar next spring, you know. So it's also really difficult to quantify that type of return, but we know throughout the whole stages of the stylist talking about it within the office, you know, the people choosing it, you know, even, you know, the hairstylist looking at the product, there's so many touch points that the piece of jewelry has to do before it is even shot. And then when it does, and then we are in the pages of, let's say, Harper's Bazaar, just to give an example, that for us, you know, we also put it on Instagram, and it's kind of that validation and that credit of like the brand is worthy enough to be in this type of publication. And it's like that stamp of approval. And it's not so much that immediate sale that comes from it, but it's like it's that longer term journey that is going to help like build the brand, and is part of the building blocks of growth.
So what do you think about working with influencer on the other hand?
No, we work with a lot of influencers, let's just say. So we do actively work with influencers. When we launched Daphne in 2018, it was a different story. So I think back in 2018, I feel like influencers had a bit more of, I would say, credibility. And they would post something that they generally loved. And I think it was a bit more of that sales tool immediately. So we would get an influencer to wear a Daphne ring, and the next morning we would wake up and look at the sales and be like, wait, what just happened? You know, and it was just like, oh, who posted about Daphne? And we were getting like those immediate sales that came through it. We don't see that anymore. But we do still think that, you know, now it has become a bit more of a traditional way of communicating and showing your product. And if you have the ring on, for example, the right influencer, although you might not see those immediate spikes of sales, it is also being like that credibility of saying so-and-so is wearing Daphne, it must be cool, or it must be in style, or it must be in fashion. So it's not so much of a, you know, sales tool per se, but I think it's a bit more of a, just communication and brand awareness.
What would you recommend to like a young person who wants to create their own brand and comes to you for an advice? What would be your advice?
For me, my advice always is like reach out to other, you know, especially female entrepreneurs, because we've all been there and we're really happy to share our knowledge and share the information. I think it can be such a wonderful community. Like we've constantly sharing information and learning from other female entrepreneurs, exchanging data, exchanging contacts. And I think most people are quite keen to help you, especially in those beginning days. So I would probably say just don't be afraid to like knock on doors, send DMs, send emails, and just say, I'm starting this brand. Do you have 30 minutes for a quick coffee or quick chat just to, you know, hear what you think? Or so, yeah, it can be a very lonely journey to start a brand. And I think it's nice for people to know that there's a huge community out there that is willing just to share their knowledge and give you a hand.
Talking about the future, what are the next projects for Daphne?
It's gonna new piece for sure. New collaboration with someone we worked in the past that we really like working with. I think that's gonna be the main thrill of next year. We retail, as Damasia says, like a small tiny shop that you would like to hang. That's on the. Well, c'est pas mal, non?
Yeah, déjà. It's big. I think it's enough. I think a store, new collection coming out.
Looking for a store plus the daily thing you always had to do, you know, stay alive, healthy.
Yeah, keep on working.
Working, having ideas and, you know.
Time to love your kids and family and friends. Okay, ça va, là.
It's a lot. We don't talk about this enough, but I think that we have
a lot
going on, and most of the time balancing between work and personal life can be challenging and still be challenging.
Keep on doing all it's my next hot thing for the next year. 2024, we can do it. Let's go.
Thank you so much for taking your time to share it with us.
Thanks so much.
Voilà, the episode is coming to an end. We hope you had a great time and we look forward to welcoming you back soon for another podcast session. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for our next adventures. Bye!